Welcome to the College Football Bros. I'm Michael Newman.
I'm Ryan Newman.
And I'm Trey Newman.
Okay, so we have ranked the head coaches in every Power 5 conference. We're going to put them all together now and rank the top 15 coaches nationally. So let's start with number 15, the worst of the 15
coaches. Yes.
So yeah, still pretty right. Good.
Yeah, he's all right. Dave Clawson, Wake Forest. Personally, I think it's a bit overplayed that he's the most underrated coach in the country. I just think, you know, he's a very good coach. He consistently fields a competitive team at a very tough place to win. The offenses are almost always extremely productive, fun to watch. Doesn't really matter the year or the quarterback, keeps turning them out. 11 wins and won the division a couple seasons ago. He won the ACC Coach of the Year. He's produced some NFL talent. They've made 7 straight bowl games, which is obviously unprecedented at Wake. And he's doing all this with not the best recruiting classes. So he's really proving his chops in being able to develop the players that he gets.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He's done great. All right. Well, moving on to number 14, a hot coach. We got Sonny Dykes. You know what I meant. TCU. Yeah, exactly. 14th Sonny Dykes. The bros here, Trey and Michael, were much higher on him than me because I had him at 21st. I mean, when you look at nationally, 7 spots isn't a drastic amount, but still, I'm not ready to just anoint him all that yet.
I'm with you there. I agree with that.
No, me too. Yeah. We had him like 14th, 15th, but yeah. The difference between that and 20th is
yeah, like you're right. It's not a ton, but you just can't overreact to 1 year. I know it was in a magical year. He made it all the way to the national title game. Fantastic. But they had a lot of close wins. Kind of got lucky. Not kind of. They got lucky a lot and found ways to win. But this was his 12th season as a head coach. And it was like this was his first really good year. He had 10 wins. He had 10 wins at SMU once. 9
but
wins.
He's had a lot of good years.
Like, that's what I said. I said really good.
You did. You're right.
I didn't say good. He's had good years, but he's never had a really good year.
You know what? Yeah. That's true.
Yep. So he had 8 at Cal was his highest there. So there was nothing great up until this season. This was the first one. So, you know, 11 years of a track record compared to 1. I really got to look more heavily at the 1. At the 11, sorry. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I want to see him back it up. Like, he doesn't need to make a national title again, but
yeah,
you know, he can't just go 6-6 this following year. And then it's just not the way it works. Like we've seen coaches have 1 magical year and they fall back.
Yeah. And he wouldn't have been 14. I'm actually surprised. Like before I went into the rankings, I wasn't expecting him to make our top 15. Just because I kind of have the same attitude as you. Like, yeah, we have seen a lot of years from him, but those years were, like I said, good. So that's why he did make the top 15, right? If it was just this year, followed by previous 11 years
Cal
of average.
Wasn't good.
Okay, honestly, when you look at before and after, it wasn't bad. But that was his worst
tenure.
But Louisiana Tech was great.
It was good.
It was very good. I would say very
good.
It's
a lot of it's consistency.
SMU was very good. His tenure there was very good. Like, I don't see how you can't say that.
June Jones had some pretty good times. It wasn't like it was amazing. Like, he only won 10 games once. And, like,
okay, that's a pretty high bar. Like,
all right. But we're talking about top 15 national coaches here. You know,
You had him 21st. All right, the difference between 21st and 14th.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that
nothing with this list. All right, number 13, we have Kalen DeBoer at Washington. Where did you have him, Ryan? I don't know. I was putting you on the spot. But
give me a minute. I don't know. I think I had him a little lower, but I can definitely see him being up this high.
So. This just had an amazing year 1 at Washington, took over a 4-8 team, went 11-2. I think this would be too high, kind of like with Sonny Dykes, if this were just based on 1 year, if it were just based on what he did this, because it's 1 year. It was a great year, but it was 1 year. But it's not. Like, he's been wildly successful everywhere he's been. You go back to Sioux Falls as a head coach. He won 3 NAIA championships. Fresno State, his first year as offensive coordinator, they had, at the time, the biggest one-year turnaround in college football history, going from 1 win to 10 wins. His offense was a big reason why. 1 year at Indiana as OC, he kind of had, he was, I would say, even a bigger reason than Tom Allen for their kind of, they cropped up for a couple years there, because he jump-started that offense with Michael Penix. And then at Fresno State as head coach, they had, you know, he took them over at not the best time, you know, and by his second year, they won 9 games. So he's just, his record is spotless. Like, he just does a great job everywhere. And yeah, culminated with a great year one. So welcome to the top 15, Kalen DeBoer.
Yeah. That's right. All right. Number 12, Josh Heupel at Tennessee. He walked into the Tennessee job with very little expectations. You know, even some people outside considered him a bridge coach, you know, just because he inherited such a hot mess there. But within 2 years, he now has the Vols as one of the better SEC programs. They knocked on the door of the playoff last year. They finished 11-2 with an Orange Bowl win over Clemson. Tennessee had their best season in about 20 years. They were able to end the streaks against Florida and, of course, Alabama, that thrilling game. If you add in, you know, some of his success at Central Florida and as an offensive coordinator prior to that, he's clearly a good coach. He produces highly potent offenses. He's done it with multiple quarterbacks. I guess now the challenge for him is, will he be able to continue to recruit and develop to be able to crack into kind of the Alabama and Georgia success?
Yep. Yeah, makes sense. All right, moving on. Number 11, we have Lane Kiffin from Ole Miss. He's been around the block, been quite a few places. Tennessee, he was there just for one brief year, decent year. Thought he was going to get it going there, but he was then at USC, was there for a while during the sanctions, kind of. So he's really hamstrung there, but he did a decent job while he was there and took a little side tours here and there. But back to college in the Florida Atlantic. And did unreal at Florida Atlantic. I mean, they were so good under him there, which is tough for Florida Atlantic. So that was great. And then he's done really well at Ole Miss. I mean, he's just, maybe he hasn't had an elite team there, but you know, he did win 10 games in a regular season and he's just kind of got them at a nice level. Like, you know, they're going to be good and maybe they're not going to be elite, but they're going to have winning seasons. They're going to have opportunities to, you know, make some good bowl games. I wish he could take a jump in the recruiting, because I think that's kind of where he's maybe there. The ceiling is a little on him there, because he's finished 15th and 21st the past couple of years. Just so I think 11 nationally ranked is good for, is like the appropriate level for him. Like, he's not quite a top 10 coach because he can't quite put those elite teams together, but he's good. He's very good.
And he's at Ole Miss. Like, if he were at Tennessee, where the obviously the NIL backing and just the kind of program tradition, right? It's Ole Miss doesn't have an amazing tradition, so I'd say he's kind of, you know, hitting
the ceiling-ish of Ole Miss.
Yeah. Okay, we have, what number are we on to? Number 10. Oh, the top 10. Luke Fickell of Wisconsin has
been in the top 10, Roger.
Yeah, exactly. He did an A-plus job at the highest level of G5 in Cincinnati.
Ryan.
Can you hear that? Took a big goal.
Ryan's just guzzling.
I'm parched tonight, man.
See it on camera.
The very end of the last episode we recorded, like, great episode. Everything's going great. I'm closing it out. I'm saying, thanks for watching, everybody. And Ryan goes, gung, 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 with like ice. Why do you fill it? Why do you have ice water on recording day? You know, you could just have it just flat.
It's hard
or
not
to one ice cube.
Cold water, man. One ice cube. What does that do? Might as well have nothing.
It doesn't make the noise.
Doesn't make the noise.
Well, I thought I was a little more discreet. Sorry. I went like sideways.
It was just the visual.
Okay. All right. So then.
Maybe the podcast audience didn't even hear.
Hey, people got a drink. Would.
Yeah.
That's true. It's no biggie.
You certainly made a biggie out of it.
It was just funny.
Okay. So. Luke Fickell, Cincinnati is what I was talking about. Four straight top 25.
Not Cincinnati, finish. Wisconsin.
Well, no. I was talking about his tenure at Cincinnati.
Sorry.
Trey. Now Trey, he's calling Ryan out for water, calling me out for.
No,
I'll remove myself.
No, but so yeah.
How about
four
you
straight
some,
top
wireless headphones, Trey? Huh? Step up to the plate. Huh?
All right. Yeah. The wireless around the horn here now.
Yeah.
Could I talk about Luke Fickell? I'm going to say it again. Four straight top 25 finishes, two in the top 10, of course, had the playoff appearance, up to their recruiting big time, just did an amazing job. And they weren't like those two top 10 finishes, they weren't that like they just fluked their way against a crappy schedule. Like if you look at the metrics, they were a legit like top 15 type team. So and he's got that big time experience as an assistant at Ohio State. So I think everyone is expecting big things at Wisconsin.
For sure. Number nine, Kyle Whittingham of Utah. He's done an amazing job. Isn't the flashiest coach out there, but he just gets results. Michael, I think you mentioned it on our Pac-12 episode about how it's crazy to think that he followed Urban Meyer. It's been so long.
What if he followed an average coach? Would he would totally be looked at differently, I think.
Agreed. I almost like, it's like a trivia question. Like not even a lot of people could answer that. Like, so I still, just looking at his tenure by itself, I still think it's incredible.
It is.
Like, cause you know, after Meyer's run and the first couple seasons for Whittingham, you kind of thought it didn't look like it was going to fully pan out, but man, he, from that point on, elevated Utah to be, I guess, an elite program. And the last few years that they were in the Mountain West, he had a dominant run. They had a number two finish in 2008. They had a slow transition to the Pac-12 again. And so you kind of thought, oh, maybe he's...
Their first year was okay in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
But then that's year two and three.
A couple years were kind of lame. So you thought, okay, might be over again. Boom. From like 2014 on to now, basically almost 10 years, they've been one of the more successful programs, you know, not just in the Pac-12, but also in the country. And, you know, they won the Pac-12 the last couple of years, been to back-to-back Rose Bowls. Utah has won the South Division or the conference four different times in the last 5 years. He's been a Pac-12, a National Coach of the Year. I mean, you go on and on. He's one of the best coaches out there.
Yeah, they're easy to root for, too. I like Utah. I got absolutely nothing against them. Their home environment's cool.
He's one of those where you would love to see him at a different spot. It's not going to happen, but
it's like when Bronco Mendenhall left BYU. It was like, what? And didn't really pan out that great, but.
Went to one Orange Bowl.
I feel like he did well at Virginia. I mean,
no, fair enough. Okay. Maybe it was a little harsh.
But yeah, it's you would want to see just if he could do it somewhere else.
Yeah.
But he doesn't need to. He's the man.
He is the man. All right. Number eight. James Franklin at Penn State. We love James Franklin here. Doesn't get the credit nationally, we think. When we talk about him, we always got to bring up Vanderbilt, back-to-back 9-win seasons and top 25 finishes.
Case closed. Years,
so. I mean, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Right? I don't know what else to expect, man. It's unreal. So, but then in 9 years at Penn State, never had less than 7 wins other than the COVID year. He's won a Big Ten title, been to 4 New Year's Six Bowls. He was won a Rose Bowl, 4 top 10 finishes, you know, and if you're in the what have you done for me lately type of crowd, hey, you just went 11-2 and the only two losses they had this past year were against two playoff teams, Ohio State and Michigan, and then they beat Utah in the Rose Bowl. So, I mean, he hasn't had maybe an elite team there like that's really threatening to win a national title, but hey, I don't know. He's in such a tough division. He always generally has really good teams. He's kind of even upping the recruiting even more now. Like, so the potential is actually there to be a playoff type caliber team. So that's his only thing missing. He just hasn't made a playoff. And, you know, that's what maybe people are down on him. But, and he had that year and a half ish where it wasn't that great. But
yeah. And I feel like the holes that you can poke in his resume like that, like, oh, yeah, like this year, oh, he lost to Ohio State and Michigan. It's like, okay, well, that's why he's behind, Ryan Day and Jim Harbaugh. Like, but I agree.
He won every other game. 11-2.
He has a great, great career resume. More than people give him credit for. Number seven, we have Brian Kelly at LSU. And what I like about him is that he's been successful everywhere he's been, and he's been in a lot of stops: Grand Valley State, Central Michigan, Cincinnati, Notre Dame. Now LSU, year one. It's hard for it to have gone better, given how they'd been the previous couple of years. He won the SEC West, beat Alabama. So, and he seems to have a great team coming back, too. So it just seems like, boom, he's hitting the ground running there. I do think we kind of forget his, like, after his first 7 years at Notre Dame, he was on the hot seat. Like, I know he did kind of have that one year where he made the national title, BCS.
Yeah, he went 4-8, what, in 2015 or something like that? Like, he had a 4-8 year.
I forget exactly the year, but yeah.
It might have been that.
Yeah. So that's why it's like, okay, maybe that's why he's not third or fourth on our list, though you could reasonably put him there. But yeah, and also at Notre Dame, like, they're, maybe that's just Notre Dame's ceiling right now, but he was very good, obviously, made some playoffs, but they were never elite. Of course, they were always a pretty big step behind those truly elite teams. But I think here at LSU, where he's going to be able to recruit better, I think maybe that's where he'll prove, hey, I can win. I can create an elite team. It's just, for whatever reason, he wasn't able to recruit that as well at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
All right. Number six, Ryan Day, Ohio State. You know, as an offensive coordinator, he definitely improved the Buckeye offense, had Dwayne Haskins put up some monster numbers. And now as a head coach for four seasons, Day is 42-6, has three top five finishes, four New Year's Six Bowls, three playoffs. I mean, just this past year, he was a play or a final kick away from, you know, getting Ohio State to the national title. Probably would have beaten TCU. And I personally think he did a good coaching job leading up to that playoff game against Georgia, since, you know, everyone wrote the Buckeyes off because, you know, it was big, bad Georgia, and they had just lost at home to Michigan. The recruiting is elite. I guess the knock, obviously, on him is he hasn't been able to fully break through in the playoff and win it all. And now he's lost to Michigan back-to-back years. And, you know, they kind of point to the defense being the liability. But if it's me, I take all those problems if I'm going to have four straight amazing seasons.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no arguing with him being there. I mean, can't put him much any real lower than this when he's at. So
no.
Yeah. All right. Well, makes sense to have Jim Harbaugh right in front of him at number five, Michigan here. I mean, just incredible success. I mean, not only at Michigan, but everywhere he's been. You know, he's never taken over a program that's actually been, like, good. You know, they've always had problems, whether it's at San Diego or Stanford or 49ers, Michigan. They were all in bad places before he got there. And then, boom, like, immediately good everywhere. It's just crazy. 74-25 at Michigan, 51-17 in Big Ten play, but 17-1 the last two seasons. So he's the best is obviously happening now. A couple wins against those Buckeyes, made the last two playoffs. Pretty disappointing results in different ways the last 2 years. Couldn't compete 2 years ago, and then this past year was not the best loss to TCU, but hey, it happens. And his recruiting seems to be getting better. They're number one right now for the 2024 class, so I don't think they'll finish there, but they're looking like the top 10 for sure. So that's, Michigan seems like, you know, they've taken that next step where, you know, they're Ohio State's peer at this point. Like, Ohio State for a long time there was, they were the top dog, and it wasn't really a debate, but now it seems like they're just neck and neck. I mean, they beat them 2 years in a row, but I think they're right there with each other.
Okay. Number four, we have Dabo Swinney of Clemson. And based on his accomplishments over his career, he would probably be like second if you were only looking backwards, but he's dropped slightly the past few years, two straight three loss seasons. The offense has been struggling, and he just never addressed it, or at least yet in the transfer portal. It's just, yeah, clearly they could have used some receivers the past couple of years. They could have used some offensive linemen, and just nothing, which to me, I think Trey was slightly lower than Ryan and I even on Sweeney. And I can see that for that reason. Like, that's a pretty big knock to not utilize what basically every other coach is utilizing, except for, I think this past year, Kirby Smart didn't, but he's recruiting a little bit better than,
yeah, you get all the top high school guys he wants.
So he didn't need them. But so that's the kind of bad. He also promoted from within at first when he lost his offensive coordinators, you know, and promoted from within from a bad offense, which is, you know, yeah. kind of questionable, especially when it ends up not working out. But he has now hired Garrett Riley, which is a big time move. I think that kind of inspires some confidence. Maybe he would have, Ryan and I would have been slightly lower on him had he not made a move like that.
Yeah.
But you know, I kind of sound mostly doom and gloom here, but still 12 straight double digit win seasons. And of course him building Clemson into, you know, at one point kind of toe to toe with Alabama is pretty amazing. Yeah.
Maybe the ACC favorite again this year, right? So
Florida State,
it's,
I think
it's close. It's close.
Yeah. They're
close. Co-favorites.
All right. Number three, we have got Lincoln Riley, USC. And, you know, he's similar to Ryan Day in that he inherited a very good situation when he was at Oklahoma after Bob Stoops. But you have to remember, you know, just like Day, Riley helped improve Oklahoma while he was the offensive coordinator there. While he was the head man at Oklahoma, never had worse than two losses. All five seasons finished in the top 10. Then at USC in year one, after inheriting a 4-8 team, he flips the roster, won 11 games, and you know, if Caleb Williams doesn't get hurt in the Pac-12 title, they might have been gone to the playoff. He's also coached, this is just kind of like an asterisk, oh, by the way, he's coached Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, and Caleb Williams to Heisman trophies. Jalen Hurts finished second. It's just a ridiculous run.
Took Joe Burrow's magical year to hold that off.
Yeah, exactly. Now he's starting to really pick up, you know, the recruiting at USC. Like, it's Riley, he's done wonders. I mean, and he's
awesome, no doubt about it. I'm jelly, Michael. I'm jelly.
I'm a USC fan, so yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah. All right, moving on.
Here we go.
Yeah,
here it is. If you watch the SEC episode, you already know where this is.
Yeah, you already know where it's exactly. Well, maybe we change number two. We have Nick Saban at number two, and Kirby Smart's going to be the top guy. So I'll. You want to take Saban, Mike? You take Saban. You were the Saban guy.
I was going to try and, you know, really advertise the show, direct them to watch the SEC video on our channel.
Dilemma, and you should.
We had a nice little debate. I'll give an abbreviated, I guess, argument. I'll try and remember. He's Nick effing Saban. That's basically what my argument was. But I don't have the stats in front of me, but it was something like, what is it?
15
straight top 10 seasons. Most of those
AP top
five. 10. Okay. What?
Coach has probably finished 11th one year.
Oh my God.
He sucks.
To say.
No. But it's just been an unbelievable run. Six national titles. And I know the last 2 years, Georgia has been better, right? So that's basically Kirby was also really good before that. But 2 years ago, no one had Kirby ahead of Saban. It was not even a debate. So it's kind of these 2 years. And I just don't think that's enough to erase the incredible longevity, switching coordinators both sides of the ball so many times. Rules changes in college football, transfer portal changing, and Saban just adjusts and is always great, still recruiting at an elite level. And, ooh, I felt like there was one more. I gave a big and, like I had a really good point coming,
and you'll have to see it in the SEC episode.
No, what was I going to say? I was going to say something really good. I don't know. Ryan, you make the case for Kirby because I'm forgetting.
It's relatively easy for Kirby. He's won back-to-back national titles. So, you know, Saban has did that once, right? And that was pretty early on-ish. So, you know, maybe Saban Smart can't do that again. But it's a what have you done for me lately type of thing. Like, it Smart has kind of proven himself here, and he's got 2 years in a row. Listen, Saban's fine. And maybe, you know, Bama will be better than Georgia in the next 2 years, and it'll flip again. But Saban is going to be turning 72 years old, which there's some concerns about that. And, you know, maybe Bama, though, this year, like there's maybe some kind of like,
oh, no, yeah,
this, cracks this could in the become, armor a little bit. Like
I made that fervent case for Saban. I do think it's very close. And yeah, if Bama, which I'm not super bullish on Bama this coming year. So yeah, if they go 10-2 and Kirby throws up another 12-0 or something like that, then yeah, I might. Flip as well.
Bama has questions. Georgia does too, because they lose Stetson Bennett and whatnot. So you're not sure there. But like, I mean, you know, Georgia's defense is going to be lights out, but Bama's offense, like, who's going to be the quarterback? Are the receivers going to be good enough? It feels like it's been a long time since there's been, I mean, this amount of question mark from their offense. It's just been such a great run of like, oh my gosh, even before you saw Bryce Young, you knew it was like, okay, they're going to keep it going. But there seems to be a little more concern, especially after they took Tyler Buchner from Notre Dame. It's like, what? But we'll see.
I do remember the point I was going to make, not as good as I thought, but it was that Kirby, like Georgia right now, their program is in better shape. Like they're right now better than Bama, but that can ebb and flow. So I don't think that's necessarily means Kirby's the better coach, but all right.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
We have the top 15 overall here. Trey, we'll let you jump in here. Anything stand out to you?
I personally, like when I look at this, I think the top say 12-ish is pretty easy to compile. I don't think you'll get too, I mean, obviously you could argue some of the order, but not too much. And so, you know, as in context, like in order to make this top 15, we each made a top 25. I don't know if you mentioned that, Mike, but to kind of average it out to the top 15, it was so difficult for me between, say, like 14 to 25, as I could make a case for so many different coaches. You know, if there's any snub, and I don't think this is a snub, but the only coach that was on my list that wasn't included in this was, I had Lance Leipold. Not, like I said, not concerned he's not on the list, because I could have made a case for a lot of guys, but I liked Leipold because of what he did at, you know, obviously Wisconsin Whitewater, but he made Buffalo a really bad program good. And then what he did in his second year turnaround at, you know, what everyone thought was impossible at Kansas. So, but I'm not going to shout from the rooftops that he should have been here.
Yeah, I still have Mario Cristobal in my top 15. Maybe some people will scoff at that, but I don't know. I'm trying not to overreact to 1 year because I had a pretty high opinion of him before this past season. And but yeah, I think to me the top 10/11 maybe was pretty clear as far as who's there. But I don't know, like Josh Heupel. We are basing a lot off of 1 year. I like him. Yeah. I'm bullish on him. I had him in my top 15, but I'm not. I could see that there's more variance to him. Like, right? Like if Tennessee
Lane Kiffin's
seven
way
and five,
more proven.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. If Tennessee went 7-5 this year, suddenly you're like, whoa! I really gotta.
And it wouldn't be that shocking if they did
on Tennessee, right? Right. So yeah, but that top 10, I feel like is pretty strong.
Yeah, you know. I was looking at it as by conference. So you got five SEC coaches, four Big Ten, three Pac-12, two ACC, and one Big 12. So it's funny how it just went 5-4-3-2-1. But Big 12 with only one, Sonny Dykes. It's tough.
That was because we all had different number ones in the Big 12 rank. Because there was just so many that were, they Twyman probably have a lot been. In that like 30 to 40 range or something.
Their problem is there's not like one dominating or two, like clearly, if you go back a few years, you had Lincoln Riley was going to be clearly up there. So it's just, you know, they were always just, there's a bunch of good coaches there. Maybe not elite at this point, but I had Jimbo still in my top 15 and I have Jeff Brohm. At 15, I am super
hot. I love Brom.
I'm super high on Brom. Mark my words, man. He's going to do super well at Louisville. So
I agree. But the thing is,
go ahead, Mike.
Well, I was just going to say that if you look at the top 15 here, there are, let's just say for 15th, there are 25 guys you could probably
make. Yeah, that was my
PJ Fleck, Kirk Ferentz, Hugh Freeze, Jonathan Smith, Mark Stoops, Chris Klieman, like.
Yeah, all those guys. If you're 15th, I'd be like, okay, that's fine.
Mike Norvell, whatever. Like, you could, there's so many guys. It's crazy. One guy that I'll say, like, okay, if Matt Rhule at Nebraska, if you took out the Carolina Panthers and he was just being hired from Baylor to Nebraska.
Oh, yeah.
After, where would he be?
He'd be top 20 for sure.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And probably in a lot of people's,
probably.
Well, you could probably go back and look at people's lists that they made. I don't know if they, if he left. Maybe he left Baylor before those lists started coming out, you know, but
right. But it's like he was so highly thought of after that, you know, Baylor good, really, really good year. So like you know, it's interesting to think about. Just you know, NFL, we've seen those NFL tenures maybe not work out the greatest for like Saban come back, and it doesn't mean they're not going to be great back again at college. So, you know, it's just interesting like
keep
that.
Keep the faith, Ryan.
There's a reason that you could put even a guy like Rule there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know? Wouldn't be crazy. All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the College Football Bros. Give you one last look at the list here. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and the YouTube channel. We have content all year round. Later in the off season, we're going to have our quarterback rankings. So we would appreciate your views on that. Give us a thumbs up. Leave us a comment below. Man, I'm asking a lot. And we will see you next time.